जयतात् भगवत् प्रियानां भाण्डो सुथानां मिति संप्रयानां श्रेणोत्यलं स्वास्त्ययनं पवित्रम् लब्धाहरो भक्तिमुपैति सिद्धिम्
The subject of the departure of the sons of Pandu for the ultimate goal of life back to Godhead is fully auspicious and is perfectly pure. Therefore, anyone who hears this narration with devotional faith certainly gains the devotional service of the Lord, the highest perfection of life. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam is a narration about the personality of Godhead and the devotees of the Lord like the Pandavas. The narration of the personality of Godhead and His devotees is absolute in itself, and thus to hear it with a devotional attitude is to associate with the Lord and constant companions of the Lord. By the process of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, one can attain the highest perfection of life, namely going back home, back to Godhead, without failure. Thus ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the first canto, 15th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Pandavas Retire Timely. Is here in giving this most auspicious benediction to any of those most fortunate souls who are submissively and attentively hearing the subject matter of Srimad Bhagavatam, Amalam Puranam, the perfectly pure literature which exclusively propagates the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna's pure devotional service. The Pandavas were the intimate friends and devotees of the Lord from their early childhood. Throughout their lives, they never ever gave up their faith in Krishna. Through tests far more severe than we could ever expect to come upon ourselves, they always maintained and preserved their pure devotion to Lord Sri Krishna. When we speak about the Pandavas, we speak about Kunti Devi, her five children, and Draupadi, their wives. It is explained in these pages of Bhagavatam the essence of Mahabharata. Mahabharata is that very, very great poem written by Vedavyas. And he wrote it for the purpose of attracting toward the gradual process of Sanatana Dharma. Therefore, Mahabharata explains the Pandavas' Leela with Krishna from the point of view often of Artha Kama Dhamma Moksha in such a way that it would inspire people who are approaching Krishna for economic development, religiosity, sense gratification, and liberation. Of course, within Mahabharata also the supreme path of pure devotional service is also revealed. After all, Bhagavad Gita is within Mahabharata, and Krishna explains in Gita, Sarva Dharman Parityajya, Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Aham Tvam Sarva Papebhyo Moksha Ishyame Masucha.
Although there are many relativistic stories, Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, Yoga Kanda within Mahabharata, Krishna ultimately says that we should abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender to Him. He also explains that the Vedas mainly deal with the three modes of material nature. We should give them up and be established in the true nature of the self, which is unalloyed service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, within the Bhagavat, there is the story where after Vedavyas had already compiled the four Vedas, the Upanishads, the Itihastas, the Puranas, the Vedanta Sutra, the Mahabharata, he was still very dissatisfied. And it was at that time that Sri Narada Rishi came to his ashram at Badrinath on the bank of the holy river Saraswati and ordered him that you must extract the true essence of pure devotional service and exclusively describe that. Otherwise, you are actually cheating society of understanding what is the true and highest goal. So Vedavyas then compiled the Srimad Bhagavatam. So sometimes when we read Mahabharata, we read stories that Vedavyas tells in a certain way, all historical, all factual. But in Srimad Bhagavatam, he speaks the highest purpose of all of these stories. He extracts the very essence of pure unalloyed love, pure surrender. So through Mahabharata and the natural commentary of all the Vedas, Srimad Bhagavatam, it is interesting, the importance of Srimad Bhagavatam, because the Vedanta Sutra is the summary, in essence, codes of all the Vedic literatures, Vedanta Sutra. Those short codes which give the very sum and substance of all the knowledge of all the Vedas. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the commentary written by the same author. So what that means, in essence, is Srimad Bhagavatam is actually the nectaring extraction of the very essence of all the Vedas. It is the conclusive commentary of what is to be achieved through the study of all Vedic literatures by Vedavyas himself. Now, so many people may have their interpretations, but Srila Prabhupada explains only the author actually knows what his real intentions were. Prabhupada tells the story of the famous book, Shah Jahan. There was a book called Shah Jahan, and throughout this book, from the beginning to the end, it just describes the atrocities of that Mughal emperor, Aurangzeb, who so cruelly killed his brothers and imprisoned his father. So someone approached the author and said, that doesn't say anything about Shah Jahan in this book. It just talks about Aurangzeb. So the title of the book should be Aurangzeb, should not be Shah Jahan. But then the author said, no, because the whole purpose of this book is for the readers, when they read about the atrocities of Aurangzeb, to understand the mental anguish that Shah Jahan had to go through. That is the whole purpose of the book. So in this way, the author is the authority who knows the perfect purpose of his book. So similarly, the author of the Vedas knows the purpose of the Vedas. Vedaishta saraveraham eva vedyo vedantikrit veda vedevacharam. The whole purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna, to love Krishna in surrender and pure devotion. And therefore, Vedavyas himself is the real authority. Anybody can speculate, but he has given Srimad Bhagavatam as the last word, the conclusion, the real meaning of all the Vedas. And Srimad Bhagavatam deals with this subject only, of the pure unalloyed devotion of the devotees toward Krishna. The Pandavas, how much they had to endure throughout their life. When they were just tiny little children, they lost their father. Their mother, who was a simple widowed queen, she actually very much wanted to enter into the flames of Maharaj Pandu. For a chaste woman in those days of Vedic society, we should know that it wasn't very painful at all for them to lay into the flames within the funeral pyre of their departed husbands. But to go on living in the world without them was so severely painful, it was actually unthinkable. It was unthinkable for a woman to go on living after her husband died like this. That was the power of their chastity. That was their powerful, the power of their faithfulness and trust in their husbands. So Madri, she had all of her desires fulfilled. But the great sages and rishis in the forest told Kunti that we know you want to do this sati right, but you have 5 children. Someone has to take care of them. And of the two, you are more fit to do so than Madri. So you have to perform the terrible burden of remaining within this world. So out of duty to Krishna, she did it. And then, as a widow, we know how Dhritarashtra, Duryodhana, Shakuni, Dushasana, and all those rogues in the names of great political leaders, how they exploited, how they manipulated the system in order to take the kingdom for themselves and banish the poor Pandavas. Before banishment, they tried to kill them by giving them poison, kill them by burning them in a house, then by cheating dice, banishing them into the jungles. Anyways, through all this, so many reversals, the Pandavas always remained dearly devoted to Lord Krishna. They never complained, Krishna, why? One time, Yudhisthira submissively asked, Krishna, why? Why you've done this to us? Everyone knows that you are the supreme controller. Not a blade of grass can move without your sanction. That past, present, and future are all not only known by you, but controlled by you. How is it that you have put us in such dilemmas constantly, one after another? Because after all, generally people come to God for peace. Isn't that true? Shanti, Om Shanti, Shanti, Om. People approach God because they want peace. If you want that kind of peace, you should approach God in the form of Om. But if you want another thing, you should approach God in the form of Krishna. Because Krishna will give you something far greater than peace. He will give you ecstasy. But there's a price for that ecstasy. Unalloyed, unadulterated surrender. So, as we have said, so many people approach God for peace. What kind of peace did the Pandavas give? As far as their social lives go. So many calamities, so many tribulations, so many terrible, terrible insults. Their life constantly at risk. When they were in the forest, the Kurus were trying to destroy them. There were so many terrible Rakshasas trying to destroy them. So Yudhisthira asked, why you have done like this to us? We're your devotees. We're always chanting your names. And the Lord replied, Yasyaham anagninami harishyetadhanam shanai. That when I want to give my greatest compassion to my devotee, I take away everything and turn everyone away from him so that my devotee only takes shelter of me. Has nothing left but me. Of course, the Pandavas, they had nothing left but Krishna from their very earliest childhood. But still, because they were surrendered souls, they were willing to be used as examples for the whole world to follow by the grace of Lord Sri Krishna. As Srila Prabhupada says, when a woman gets married, sometimes due to being very, very new to the house, it's very uncomfortable for the mother to teach her how to do things directly. So she teaches the daughter-in-law through the daughter. Even though the daughter knows everything about the house, the mother will say, you do like this, don't do like this, why you have done like this. And the daughter knows. She's just, I already know all these things, but she's doing this so that the daughter-in-law learns. And meanwhile, she learns everything through this process. So similarly, Krishna instructs us through Bhagavad Gita, but through his devotees, he teaches us actually how to live Bhagavad Gita. And therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained that the real treasure of the purport of the Vedas is to be understood only through the example of the lives of the great Vaishnavas. That is how we truly can understand what is the glory of the highest truths. The Pandavas, they lived on this earth through nothing but tribulation. But in their hearts, they were always experiencing the ecstasy of Krishna's love. Like the lotus flower can be in the muddiest, dirtiest of all places, but still it remains completely pure because of its very nature. So similarly, great devotees may be put in the most difficult, horrible positions, sometimes positions of calamity, sometimes positions of disease, sometimes positions of being terribly misunderstood and exiled from society. But like lotus flowers, their hearts always remain in the ecstasy of Krishna's love. Tate nukam pam sushamikshamano bunjana eva atmakritam vibhagam. Nirvagva purvir vidadam namaste jiveti yomokti pade sadaya bhag. This is the price to go back to Godhead. That even when the greatest dangers and the greatest sufferings come upon us in life, in a prayerful and grateful mood of devotion, we say, Krishna, thank you. I deserve worse. You're just giving me this much just to help me remember you with better quality. And Draupadi, she followed the path of her husband's. When she was being stripped of her clothes, she didn't say, Krishna, why are you doing this? She raised her arms and prayed, Hey Govinda, Hey Krishna, I am yours. I am surrendered to your lotus feet. When Duryodhana wanted to embarrass the Pandavas and Draupadi by sending Durvasa Muni to Kamvan, knowing that they had already taken their meal from Draupadi's magic cooking pot. That cooking pot could prepare food for any number of people until the Pandavas and Draupadi ate from it. Then it became an ordinary kitchen utensil. So he specifically sent Durvasa Muni just after that the Pandavas took prasad. And you all know, Durvasa Muni, he travels with an entourage. 60,000? 60,000. You can understand. Last night we had a program, and how much we have meetings for weeks and months to decide how to feed all these people. Maybe 2,000 may come, maybe 3,000, maybe even 5,000. How to feed them? It's taken us about a year and a half to finally get some sort of conclusive process by which we can serve them where they're not standing in line, where they're not in anxiety, where they're not stealing plates, and where they're getting nice prasad. So much management, so much organization, so much planning. It takes weeks, months, years it's taken us. Anyways, 60,000. during our Premanjali, there was about 20 to 30,000? Huh? How many? 40,000. 30,000. Anyways, something like that, about 30,000 people. You remember the crowds all saying, why we're not getting prasad, why we're not getting in, why the lines are so long. You've seen that? Anyways, multiply that by two. Premanjali, two Premanjalis together. And that's how many people were coming to Draupadi's little thatched hut in the forest. And she was supposed to feed everyone. We didn't feed everyone. We planned for weeks, for months. We had so many cooks. We had so many devotees. And still, so many people complained there wasn't enough prasad. But in this case, 60,000. But we were lucky because Durvas Muni didn't come with all of them. Otherwise, I don't know what kind of curse would have been upon our heads if he came to that Premanjali festival. So, if any one of his followers was not sumptuously fed, you know what he did to Ambarish Maharaj. All Ambarish Maharaj did is drink a drop of Charanamrit, and there was a fiery demon upon him. So they know what is the history of Durvas Muni. So he came. And Draupadi and Yudhis, she said, what can I do? They said, please, of course, you want prasad, of course we will give. Take your bath in Jamuna. So he went to Jamuna, and the Pandavas and everybody were very much worried. What are we going to do? This sage is definitely going to curse us unless we feed everyone, and we have no food. There was no bhoga, not even a vegetable, not even a leaf anywhere in the house. Dilemma. We're experiencing sometimes during our feast programs a little trace of what kind of dilemma they were in, of feeding the masses. And they only had a few minutes to prepare everything. Even Sanat Kumar would have been very much in a crisis in this situation. But there's only one thing to do when you're in a crisis. You just have to turn to Krishna. So they turned to Krishna. Draupadi started praying, Krishna, please save us. Please, Krishna, save us. You are the only one. And Krishna always hears the prayers of his devotees. Within seconds, Krishna was knocking upon their door. And she said, oh, Krishna, you have come. He said, yes, I am hungry. Give me food. And Draupadi said, oh my, offending Durvas Muni is one thing, but now we don't even have enough, any food to give hospitality to Krishna, our Lord. This is very bad. So she, her heart just broken in thousands of pieces, said, Krishna, we don't have anything. He said, bring me the pot. So she brought the pot. And of course, whatever was in the pot were the Pandavas' remnants. They had already eaten from that pot. So it was a very wonderful thing. Krishna took the remnants of his devotee. What did he find? One little tiny trace of prasad that was left somewhere in a remote corner of that pot. One little trace that when they cleaned it, they missed it somehow or other. And when he took that trace, because Krishna is the supreme root of the tree of all material existence. Bhagavatam says, if you water the root of the tree, every branch, leaf, twig, flower is naturally satisfied. So Krishna wanted to show how this is a tangible, practical, philosophical statement. So when he took that little sliver and was satisfied by the devotion of Draupadi and the Pandavas, all the followers of Durvas, including the Muni himself, they became filled up with prasad. They couldn't understand what's happening. They were just so full that they just couldn't even take anything anymore. completely full, completely satisfied. And then they were thinking, oh my God, Yudhisthira Maharaj is such a benevolent, loving Vaishnav. If we go back to the house, he's going to have a huge feast. And we won't be able to eat even a crumb or a drop of anything. And this will be an aparad to Yudhisthira. And God knows what he might do to us. So they didn't know what to do. At that time, Krishna, the Pandavas didn't know what was happening. They still considered themselves in a dilemma, just praying to Krishna to save them. So Krishna told Bhima, take your club and go tell Durvasa Muni and his followers to come, prasad is ready. There was no prasad. This is faith. Faith in the word of God. Bhima took his club, went out on Krishna's order to tell them to come to take prasad when there was not even a morsel of prasad, knowing Durvasa Muni. This act was an act of total surrender. So Bhima went. And when they saw Bhima coming with his club, they were thinking, this is a very fearful situation. If we don't eat the prasad cooked by Draupadi, his wife, we know what he can do to people who offend his wife. So they didn't know what to do. So what they did is he just came with his club and said, prasad is ready, come, please, come, come. They just... as soon as he turned his back, they just ran away as fast as they could to the farthest planet they could reach by their mystic powers. In this way, Krishna saved them. So whatever the situation, Krishna always saves his devotees. And this is the story of the Pandavas. And throughout their lives, the battle of Kurukshetra happened. Abhimanyu was killed, so many of their Drona, Bhishma. But they never gave up their faith in Krishna. Because after all these situations of this world, it is like a phantasmagoria. It is like a dream. Birth, death, honor, dishonor, success, failure, victory, defeat. It is all like the different waves on the dream of this ocean of material existence, always going up, coming down. Nothing is permanent. Therefore, devotees do not take the changes of this world very seriously. They only take their remembrance of Krishna and service to Krishna seriously, because it is the only thing of any permanence. It is the only thing that is real. They asked Srila Prabhupada about how you say that this material world is like a dream. And Srila Prabhupada said, yes, it is a dream. Just like you dream at night. You're being eaten by tiger, and then you think, oh, tiger, tiger, tiger. And then you wake up and there's no tiger. He said, so similarly, in the day you are dreaming also. You are dreaming that I have to go to work, I have a wife, I have these children. And then you go to sleep at night, and you forget that you have a wife, you forget you have children, you forget you have husband, you forget you have a job, you forget you have a home, you forget about all your bills, you forget everything. So what does that mean? Prabhupada explains, if you're forgetting it, that means it's actually a dream. All of the things that you're identifying with at night, you forget during the day. And all the things that you identify in the day, you forget at night. So the only difference between the day and the night is one is night dreaming and the other is daydreaming. But this whole world is like a dream. So why should we take these dreams so seriously? We should wake up to reality, to the true nature of the soul, which is to be the eternal servant of Krishna, to always remember Krishna, to surrender for the pleasure of Krishna. That is reality. Jeev jago, gouda chandra bole. Kota nidra jayo maya, pisachira kole. That we are just on the lap of maya, sleeping on her lap. Sometimes daydreaming and sometimes night dreaming. Sleeping on the lap of Maya. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the very embodiment of the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam, is coming to teach us, wake up! Chant the holy name of the Lord. Hear the glories of the Lord. So the Pandavas, even though so many difficulties came, they always maintained the roots of their consciousness within the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore they were always protected. They were always in ecstatic love. They were always in real peace, the highest peace. Not the peace that everything goes right. This is the peace that people pray for generally when they say Om Shanti Shanti Om. That then everything will be nice. There will be peace on earth. There will be no wars. There will be no earthquakes. There will be no famine. There will be no arguments with my wife and husband. My children will obey me. I'll have all the money I need. I'll eat nice food and be able to just digest it properly. I'll be in good health. My back won't hurt. My eyes, I'll be able to see better. This is the idea of peace. But this is not peace, because the mind, no matter how nice everything is, the mind is never can find any lasting peace in this material world. Because the soul doesn't want peace. This is not something you'll hear from most yogis or sadhus. The soul doesn't want peace. This is Srimad Bhagavatam's philosophy. The soul wants ecstasy. The soul wants ananda. And that ananda is something that oftentimes does not appear to be peace to the material eyes. The gopis, after Krishna left Vrindavan, they had no material sense of peace. They were weeping, crying, day and night. But in that, they were experiencing ananda, transcendental ecstasy. Prahlad Maharaj, there was no peace in his life. One day he was taken to the pot of oil and thrown in. Then he was transported to the mountain to be thrown off. Then they were just shifting him from one torture to another. Huh? It's like sometimes you go to get some permit and they say first you go to this person and fill out this, then you go to this person. You're just being taken from one department to another, one after another. Well, Prahlad was taken to the elephant stampeding department, and then from there he was taken to the boiling oil department, then to the poison food department, then to the throwing off mountain department, then to the fire department. In this way, he was just one after another. He was just being tortured and insulted. And then he went to the department where everyone stabs you with tridents and blasphemes you. So what kind of peace is that? He experienced ananda, ecstasy. Because through it all, his consciousness was always fixed in remembrance of the lotus feet of Lord Hari and chanting his holy names. The Pandavas, after Krishna leaves the world, as described in this chapter, they were thinking, what is the use of this world without Krishna? Sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda vidahe name. This whole world is nothing but a dreary void without Krishna. And of course, we understand that we have Krishna through our service to Krishna. When there's no more service, then we have no more reason to stay here. Just like when Srila Prabhupada was in his last days, at a certain point, Krishna revealed to him that your service in this mortal world is finished. At that time, Srila Prabhupada said, take me to Vrindavan. I have nothing else attached. I'm ready to go. There's no reason for me to stay anywhere in this world. Even one great yogi, very famous yogi, even he was remarking to me about this. Perhaps the most famous yogi in the world as far as that type of yoga. He said, your Guru Maharaj, he really was a real saint. He said when it came to the end of his life, he wasn't trying to, he just said when Krishna just revealed to him his service is finished, he just said, I'm ready to go. No more business. And he went back home, back to God. Vrindavan. So in the same way, we understand that our connection to Krishna is with service. Sunyayatam jagat sarvam govindavidehename. Without the darshan of Krishna, this world is a dreary void. But in the Vaishnava Siddhanta, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, do not try to see Krishna, try to serve Krishna, so he wants to see you. So our darshan with Krishna is in our service. We can see Krishna in our service. Without service, without devotional service, this whole world is nothing but a terrible, dreary void. And what is service? Service is not to do what you like. Service is to do what Krishna likes. So Krishna had particular service for the Pandavas, and then he said, your service is finished. You have done your job and you have done it well. You helped me to establish dharma, dharma samstapanaradhaya. In the world, you have shown by your example what is a pure devotee. Your service is complete. No more service now. So when they had no more service to Krishna, they had no attachments to anything of this mortal sphere of the material existence. And they were just ready to go. And they renounced all of their luxuries. Their whole life was just an intrigue of trying to get the kingdom back. When they were little tiny children, the kingdom was supposed to be theirs. But it was stolen away from them. And then it has already been explained, all the other intrigues. How, through the envy of the Kurus, it was just taken away. They were always, by the arrangement of Krishna, trying to get it back. They could never get it back. Then finally, this terrible, the bloodiest, most terrible war that this world has ever seen, practically, in modern history. They fought. Finally, they got the kingdom. But they had no attachment. If they had no service, if Krishna did not want their service by ruling the world, they did not want the world. If they didn't have a service to Krishna in their palace, the palace was a dreary void. If Krishna did not have a service for them in their relationships with one another, their wives, their children, and everything else, that was all a dreary void. It describes here. Yudhisthira just left everyone and went to the Himalayas. And Draupadi and Subhadra, as we were in the last verse yesterday, Giriraj Maharaj was explaining, Draupadi and Subhadra, they were our husbands who were so carefully guarding us, protecting us, loving us. When the slightest insult had to Draupadi, Duryodhana just showed his thigh to her. And Bhima vowed to kill Duryodhana, break his thighs and all of his brothers and drink their blood. Huh? This is what type of protection they offered to their wives. This is the way husbands are supposed to be. Of course, wives should also be like Draupadi. So, in this way, how much they gave, so much to protect. But when it came time, because they did it all as a service to Krishna, it was their service to Krishna to protect their wives. It's not simply for the sake of wife protection that they protected their wives. It's a service to Krishna. But when that service was finished, they just left. And Draupadi and Subhadra were just standing behind. They're gone. They didn't even say Hari Bol. They just left. At that time, Draupadi and Subhadra, they understood to fly their own airplane at that time. They, in the mood of their husbands, they also completely took shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna from the core of their hearts. Because they knew they had no more service in this world. They had no more service to their husbands. They just took shelter of Krishna at that time. And in this way, all of them, Kunti, Draupadi, Yudhisthira, Bhima, Arjuna, Nakula, Sahadev, in their very self-same bodies, they went back to the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, where Krishna was calling upon them for his eternal loving service. Sutta Goswami is here explaining, because this subject deals with Krishna, his pure devotees, and pure devotional service, anyone who hears this narration with a submissive heart will become completely purified and achieve the loving devotional service of the Supreme Personality of God. Thank you very much.